Thanks for listening to the show. Join us online at playvolutionhq.com and learn how to support the show at explorationsearlylearning.com/support.
Welcome to Renegade Rules. Kick back, settle in, and let us fill your ear holes with early learning information, wisdom, and advice. And now, here's Heather and Jeff.
Welcome to Renegade Rules. Jeff Johnson here. I'm not in studio, on the phone with Heather Shoemaker. And Heather, we've got another guest back to the show. Who are we talking to today?
Yes, well, we have Jessica Smock with us. And I was intrigued because I love hearing stories about parents who are teachers or former teachers who gave lots of homework and then have changed their minds on the topic. So Jessica does a lot of writing on all sorts of topics, including homework and kindergarten and good topics like that. So we're thrilled to have her on the show.
I'm thrilled to be here. I am such a fan of your work.
Oh, well, thank you. Can you just tell us a little bit about the kind of teacher that you were when you first started out teaching? I take it you were, was it fourth and fifth grade or fifth grade teaching?
Mostly fifth and sixth grade.
Okay.
I did teach a bit of high school and 1 year of second grade as well. I taught English and history, and I taught in the suburban public schools for a while, and then mostly at a independent school outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And it was a pretty, competitive school, and there was kind of almost a competition among teachers, like who was the best teacher by how much homework you gave and how rigorous you were.
Oh, my goodness.
And the kids voted on that?
No. They expected it was a sort of the culture of the school.
I'm just picturing the teacher's lounge. Did you have little points for yourselves? How much homework you gave to the kids? Or was it unspoken? It was just acknowledged that you were all going to heap homework on the kids.
It was just acknowledged, and it was a funny thing too, because it was technically called the lower school. It was pre-K to 6 in one campus. And in the lower grades, it was all, very kind of touchy-feely and nice. And then all of a sudden, fifth grade, it was like slam. Suddenly, you're in, like, the real world, and you get tons and tons of homework. And
would you assign? I mean, so fifth grader is a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Sometimes 11. Would you try to have them do hours and hours? Were you calculating, well, this should take them half an hour?
I did try to calculate it to some extent per subject. I would try to estimate something like a half an hour per subject, maybe. And since really my main passion, what I really liked was English, I definitely focused more on writing homework. And there was, a lot of reading as well. But my big thing was that it was a lot of the teachers were just very traditional. And I wanted to make sure, and they would just give homework like, write a 5-page book report. with no instructions or guidance or, not working up to it in class or anything. So I wanted to make sure that I broke down the assignment into chunks, manageable chunks for each day.
Mm-hmm. And can you give us an example for those of us who were blissfully homework deprived as children? what a fifth grader back in your class.
Hello?
Maybe a typical day.
Like the full scope of everything?
Well, half an hour per subject, what would it look like?
Maybe a half an hour on an ongoing writing project in English and maybe a half an hour of social studies reading and some sort of assignment, then maybe a half an hour of math and half hour of science. I didn't teach science, but and then if there were other odds, probably some homework for foreign language.
Wow.
Yes.
What made you change your approach to homework? Because I understand now, in fact, the reason that I asked you to be on the show is I came across something you wrote, something called maybe 21 better things your child can do rather than doing homework. So you've made a huge turnaround. What can you describe that process and how you got from the teacher who assigned 2 hours a night to fifth graders to who you are today?
Well, mainly, so I went back. I had been in a doctoral program before I was in teaching, and then I went back to finish my PhD and after teaching for about a decade. And I did take a lot of classes with some, you know, elementary teachers. And I just basically, it wasn't, at that point, I wasn't even a parent. I just got to know the research about homework. And it was, you know, at that point, a pretty intellectual exercise. I was like, well, oh, this doesn't seem to be a good idea. And it was kind of a hot topic when I was in graduate school.
Right. I'm curious because you taught for 10 years. You weren't a parent at the time yourself, but you had gone to teacher training of some sort, hadn't you? I'm assuming you had a teaching certificate and done your student teaching.
Oh, yeah,
and all that.
Yeah.
So what was the training that you were given that made you think, oh, I got to assign a lot of homework?
It wasn't so much my teacher training, and this is the case in a lot of teacher training. It wasn't that nuts and bolts, you know, it wasn't that, it was a lot of, you know, educational philosophy and methods of particular teaching. We never got into the nuts and bolts of how you mm-hmm. plan lessons or how much homework to give or anything like that. And it's really
so
just,
it really wasn't something that came up until you got academic-wise, till you got to graduate school.
Yeah. No, it wasn't.
Is it safe to say it was more the culture of the teaching environments where you're
oh, absolutely.
What your colleagues were doing.
Yeah, and if you, at another school, it would have been entirely inappropriate to give that much homework, you know. So, it definitely depends on the culture of the school.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me because, you know, this is a shining, your life path is a shining example of it. But since homework is such a dominant activity in schools and teachers' lives and kids' lives and parents' lives, and yet it's more a school culture and habit than it is based in the research, and the new teachers coming out of teacher training are not really maybe getting anything on the subject or learning what the research says at all when they begin. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was the case. I mean, I got my teaching certification in the late 90s, so I don't know how things are right now, but that was certainly the case. There really wasn't. I mean, that's true very generally about a lot of the things that you write about. Teachers aren't given practical day-to-day discussion or instruction on that, what it's going to be like in your daily life as a teacher. What does it mean to give homework, or why should kids have recess? And that, I mean, that was I could have written another article on my thoughts about recess and my evolution about recess, because that's another example where I'm
right.
a little embarrassed of my own behavior as a teacher.
Is very similar to many teachers, because often, especially elementary school teachers, where I think the misplaced homework is even the worst, is that they often start out with a passion for kids, a passion for learning, and get into a situation where they don't know, and so they give a lot of homework, assign a lot of homework, and they're not yet parents themselves often when they start. And then sometimes a teacher will, you know, become a parent and start seeing things from the other point of view and thinking, oh gosh, my kid doesn't need this, and start to see both sides of it for a while, but also doubting, oh, maybe I should stick with, as a teacher, I know that's good for them, I need to keep with it. Is that your story, or did you, you learned it through your graduate program, and then I understand you have kids now.
Yeah, well, my son is going to be entering kindergarten. We kept him back for a year, and he went to a Waldorf preschool this year because he wasn't quite ready for kindergarten. And then I have a two-year-old daughter. So I don't have too much practical experience in that other than trying to he was in a pretty competitive preschool, another private school preschool that was, at the time, I really didn't know better, but it was way too academic focused for him. You know, they were 4-year-olds sitting down and doing research and doing worksheets and letters every day for long stretches of time. And
well, and we're living in a world where there are preschools that are sending homework home with their preschoolers.
Oh yes, so we got, and I, my only experience in homework is that, you know, he wasn't progressing the way he should be, and so we would get packets of, you know, worksheets of letters to do at home, and then a big packet for the summer. And I just couldn't get him to do it. You know, he was a mess already from a full day of this.
Yeah.
And the last thing I was going to do, I just, you know, we didn't do it.
So. Good for you.
Right. So in that way, you were just trusting. You trusted your kid and you trusted yourself that this wasn't right for him, right?
Oh, absolutely. And he was just, he was so anxious about school and upset. And he was just, at that point, I really hadn't looked too deeply into the research of when kids begin literacy instruction or when they should or anything. It was just a gut instinct, like, my kid is miserable and he's going to hate school and he's not even 5 yet.
Yeah.
So...
Mm-hmm. So some of the your evolution on this, as you might call it, came through the research you learned in your graduate program, and some of it came from living with a child who was miserable.
And then research I did after the fact in order to kind of write about it. Mm-hmm.
And so in your own classroom, how did you make that transition? Was it a Wednesday morning you decided, oh, no more homework? Or was it a beginning of the year thing? Or was it a slow gradual change you made?
I was in graduate school, so I haven't been teaching since.
We need you back in the classroom so you can assign homework.
No. I think... I probably will not go back to teaching.
Oh, I want to have that conversation.
Well, you know, it's interesting because
I was an accidental teacher, really. I mean, my heart was always in. I was right after undergrad. I worked in newspapers and journalism, mm-hmm. and then was in a PhD program, and it just. I ended up being a teacher and stayed, honestly, because I was so bad at it at first. it killed me that I just wanted to be a really good teacher. I couldn't fail at something so miserably. So I worked at it and worked at it. And then...
And assign more homework so you'd be a better teacher.
Yeah. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it eat your soul a little bit? Did it eat your soul a little bit? Just the whole... system
assigning homework?
No, just the whole system.
Oh yeah. I basically worked at a prep school for the last several years, so it was very, the part that ate at my soul was sort of the, I don't know, the inequality and privilege inherent in that system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of led me to going to grad school.
That happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's actually ironic because a lot of the kids who do go to these cram schools starting as preschoolers are the inequality of what they're getting. They're not getting the playtime some of their less economically advantaged peers are getting in some cases. So it's almost a case of too much privilege. They're getting the wrong things for any child.
Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting to me because a lot of the teachers who evolve their thinking so much, and in which, you know, you're a case in point, are often the ones that leave the system. They can't take the culture of the schools and too many colleagues that don't see the light. And they often will retire early, especially if they're kindergarten teachers or for the younger grades, or as you did, especially if when their kids come along, decide to do a different career path. And of course, on the personal level, that's all wonderful. But overall, there's a lot of people making those similar decisions, and that's difficult. We almost need former teachers to go back and be advocates within schools and help the ones who are still in the system to realize that there is another way of learning that will really benefit kids and adults alike.
Yes, definitely. I think we just need a overhaul of how our society views teaching as a profession in general. And, you know, through this research, of course, about kids in literacy and young kids in literacy, I've read a lot about Finland. And in many countries that supposedly do so much better than the United States does, there's a much different cultural view of teachers and teaching. You know, in Finland, teachers are viewed as, they come from the cream of the crop of the college class. They're viewed as, like, on the line with doctors and lawyers as real, true professionals. And that's just not the case with public school teachers today.
In this country, yeah.
In this country, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can we tap some of your memories about recess? Can you give us some recess horror stories and then maybe some...
Oh, from myself? Sure.
Yes.
So I was definitely a teacher that would deny recess to my class if for misbehavior or not getting work done, which, of course, you know, is not a good thing. And I... actually did not, you know, there was kind of a tension between my private school, the private school where I taught, had a lot of, as you said, a lot of times the more privileged kids end up with more recess and more, they understand the parents fight for that. And my school had a lot of recess and a lot of the teachers were angry about that. We wanted more instruction time. So
How much recess time did the kids have officially? I mean, I know you could take it away from them, but how much was a normal?
Let's see, fifth grade probably. Oh, there was one official recess of maybe half an hour, and then there was after lunch time, so maybe about 45 minutes a day plus PE, you know, plus gym, pretty much every day. Second graders had a bit more when I taught second grade.
And did you change your thinking a bit over time when you were in graduate school about recess, or how did that story come about as far as your recess views today?
I think that that has more to do with, I think, just seeing my son get older and how what he's like or what he's been like in a classroom where he doesn't have enough movement and playtime. The difference between him when he was at the preschool that had the, you know, homework and the desks and writing worksheets every day and all that stuff. He was miserable and didn't get anywhere near enough physical activity or break time. And then once he went to Waldorf, he was like a different kid. He loved going to school.
So that was more of a personal...
That was definitely more of a of a mm-hmm. personal thing. And then at the same time, there was this kind of greater societal awareness. I mean, you read it in the newspapers all the time about recess and why it's important.
Mm-hmm. So
now I'm curious. Oh. I think many parents with a, especially a firstborn child, they're looking around for the best preschool to send their child to. If they live in a big enough community, they have more than one option. What sort of, did you look at several schools before selecting that one that now you, the academic one that now you realize wasn't the best fit for him? Or were there certain things that that preschool was telling you that, really made you get lured into it? Were there certain things that you were susceptible as a new parent that you chose that preschool on purpose for him?
Well, my husband grew up in this area. We moved back here from Boston when my son was a baby, and he had attended that same elementary school. So it was kind of, and my husband's father had been on the board of trustees, so it was more like personal family connections, and it was just, it's just kind of known as being the most prestigious school in the area. But at the same time, I mean, it's a very warm and nurturing place. The teachers are wonderful and kind and nice. When we visited the school, I certainly didn't get the impression that it was some sort of, academic factory or something at all. So, I couldn't tell on the face of things the difference between that school and the others until he was actually there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody, we'll be back next week with part two of this interview. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Alexander Shoemaker. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.